If you're over 40 and you're thinking about IVF and you've been told your clock is ticking, if you have PCOS and you feel confused about what's realistic, this episode is for you because fertility conversations are often filled with extremes. Today, we're going to talk about IVF over 40, PCOS, and a breakthrough approach. Dr. Siebert, let's start here. When a woman is over 40 and walks into your office, what's the first myth that you have to clear up?
Well, 40-year-old women often are just not aware of how fast their biologic clock has been ticking. Between the ages of 30 and 5 and 40, there's a rapid decline, not only in the number of eggs, but also in the fertility of each egg that still exists. And so by 40, she's got a double whammy. She has less eggs than she had 5 years earlier, dramatically less eggs. But not only that, the eggs are just less fertile. So maybe their doctor said, "Well, you have regular periods and your uterus is okay, so don't worry about it. You'll get pregnant eventually." But of course, that's an error because 90% of women who, by the time they're 40, are infertile, and they're not going to get pregnant without IVF.
So now let's be honest. Is social media, does it make things look easier than it is? But the statistics also feel terrifying. So what's really realistic and what's not?
Well, that's a good question about social media because that's the way most people get their news nowadays is through social media, and I have no problem with that. It's like the democratization, you might say, of journalism, and a lot of people are upset about it. But Abraham Lincoln said, "You can fool all the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time." So this democratization of information coming about through social media is just fine with me. People can discern the wheat from the chaff. The important thing we tell people is that IVF is a miserable thing usually to go through with all the hormone injections and hormone swings, the emotions, visits to the doctors and blood tests and ultrasounds. It seems awful. So we certainly have reduced it to the bare minimum, called mini IVF. In fact, a lower dose of stimulatory hormones not only is easier on the woman, less expensive, but it gives us a much higher baby rate per egg. So in every respect, making IVF is easier for a woman when they reach older age. Making it easier for them is actually going to give us better results. And so I make it clear, it's just a low dose of the shot of FSH every other day. Just a simple pill Clomid that's been available for 70 years every day, and only a few cases of monitoring. And we always get better quality eggs that way. And we don't get any less eggs because the ovary remarkably does not need all that hormonal bombing that usually takes place in IVF. It just needs the modest amount of hormone that is normal in the body. So we try to make it as easy as we can for women, but also that makes it less expensive and makes it a better success rate, really.
Now, what truly changes after 40? Is it the egg quality, or is it the quantity, or is it really both?
Well, the egg quantity is always a problem when you get older because the majority of human eggs are not going to result in a baby. And so you'd rather have 15 eggs than 3 eggs.
Yes.
However, if you're trying to get more eggs by giving a huge dose of hormones, you ruin those eggs and you get a high number of really poor quality eggs that won't result in a baby. But if a woman has a lot of eggs, so that with a low dose of hormones, she yields a lot of eggs, well, that's great. We love that. That's going to give her statistically a higher chance of success in any given IVF cycle. But if you're trying to get more eggs by pounding her with hormones, then it's a reverse effect and it's diminishing returns and you get poor quality eggs. Now, but the most important thing is the age of the eggs. That is the critical thing. So if she's 23 and she wants to have a baby and she happened to have been born with a low number of eggs, that's okay. We get one or two eggs and she'll get pregnant with that. It's fine. A teenager, I mean, those eggs are spectacular, teenage eggs. Why do I know that? Well, because we freeze the ovary tissue from teenagers with cancer prior to they have their sterilizing cancer treatment. And then we transplant that maybe 16-year-old ovary back to her 15 or 20 years later when she wants to have a baby. Pregnancy is just like that. It's fantastic. So we know that these teenage ovaries are extremely fertile. And so teenagers better watch out about an unwanted pregnancy if they don't know what they're doing. But then gradually the fertility of the eggs goes down as they get older. And so in your early 20s, there's about a 2% risk of being infertile. By your late 20s, it's up to about 16%. And as I told you, by the time you're 35, it's about 20% of women are infertile and need help. And by 40, 90% of women are infertile and need help. So the most important thing is the age of the eggs, because you're born with all the eggs you're ever going to have. You're not making new eggs like men are making new sperm every day. Phil Donahue used to make this joke about no wonder men are so tired because they're making all these millions of sperm every day that robs them of their energy. He was just, of course, joking. But the fact is that metabolically, men are making new sperm all the time. And so when they're 100, if they make it that long, their sperm are going to be pretty good. But with women, the eggs are getting older as they get older. And of course, they run out of eggs on average at age 51. So the most important thing is the age of the eggs. So I tell women that if they don't want to have babies right now, and they're not sure if they want babies in the future, they ought to at least freeze their eggs or their ovary tissue before they're 35, because that's when the most dramatic decline in fertility of the eggs occurs past age 35. So age is what's crucial.
What matters more than just age alone? So, besides age, what else is an important factor?
Okay. I can't say anything matters more. I mean, I know the way you asked that question, you want to know about other issues, but age is crucial. Now, there are several different causes of fertility, and actually, they're more or less common at different ages for the women. The men, it really doesn't matter what the age is. The husband, the male partners, doesn't really matter that much because he keeps on making new sperm. So for when we see a couple in their early 20s that have been trying to get pregnant for a few years unsuccessfully, she's either got blocked tubes or she might have PCOS. Now, PCOS is an interesting condition that women ought to know about. A lot of doctors are very confused by it. They might call it the metabolic syndrome. They're mixed up. They know for sure that women with PCOS are either not ovulating good eggs or they're not ovulating at all, and they tend to have irregular cycles. But what's the cause of it? Well, we've done a lot of research in this. The cause is very simple. Women with PCOS are born with a gigantic number of eggs. Now that sounds like it should be good because women with PCOS are likely to undergo menopause later in life, maybe on average age 61 instead of age 51. So it sounds good to have all those eggs. But it actually isn't good when you're young and you want to have children because that inhibits the pituitary gland secretion of the hormones FSH and LH, which stimulate the ovary. And so when she has her period, she's not recruiting a dominant follicle. And the FSH just doesn't go that high because there's so many eggs that they're inhibiting the pituitary gland. And so she winds up having a lot of old, unovulated eggs, irregular cycles of bleeding. And that creates a hormonal imbalance where she's actually making more testosterone. And that actually makes her more hungry. And so she becomes overweight. And then those fat cells absorb estrogen, and the estrogen that her fat cells have absorbed because she's becoming overweight, that will also inhibit the pituitary gland from making FSH and LH. And so it's a vicious cycle. But the usual start of the vicious cycle is not the overweight. Being overweight can start PCOS, it can start the vicious cycle. But the majority of women with PCOS are not overweight. Or they become overweight later because of the hormonal imbalance that just makes them have an excessive appetite. But it's a vicious cycle. Then, as the fat cells increase, they also suppress the pituitary gland. And it's just a vicious cycle of either not ovulating with irregular cycles ovulating very late, so the eggs aren't really very good anymore, or just having poor quality eggs. So what's the solution to that? Well, if you try to stimulate their ovulation with hormones, whoa, they can explode with hyperstimulation syndrome. It's very dangerous, and they can wind up with quintuplets, and it's very dangerous. So you want to give them a small amount of hormone, and you must do the IVF. And I say mini IVF. You stimulate them very mildly, you'll still get lots of eggs, but they're at very great risk of what we call hyperstimulation syndrome when you treat them. So doctors are afraid to treat them properly. They'll give them a little letrozole, a little pill, and that's about it. That doesn't move the needle. Because if you really stimulate them to get better ovulation, you have so many eggs, it can be extremely dangerous. And they fill up their abdomen with eggs and fluid, and that actually inhibits the breathing and makes them short of breath and dehydrates them peripherally, even though all the fluid is inside their abdomen. It's a terrible condition, hyperstimulation syndrome. So doctors are afraid to really stimulate women with PCOS properly. And so it's been really tough to treat. But we just find it's very easy. You do mini IVF, you trigger maturation with Lupron instead of HCG, and that just goes up in a 12-hour period and then goes down. So they're in no danger. They will never have hyperstimulation syndrome if you trigger with Lupron. And then you can get those eggs and get good quality eggs, and then you might have too many and you might wind up with 10 embryos. But you only have to transfer one or two embryos at a time because the others you'll freeze. So doing an IVF, there's really no risk of a dangerous multiple pregnancy. But if you were to stimulate them properly and try to avoid IVF, then there's a big dangerous risk of hyperstimulation syndrome and multiple pregnancy. I could even go further that you don't want them to get pregnant around the time you stimulate them because the HCG of pregnancy can stimulate those many follicles and make the hyperstimulation syndrome very dangerous. You want to freeze the embryos and then transfer those one or two embryos to the patient 3 months later, after the ovary has come back down to size. So I think PCOS is relatively easy to treat nowadays, but you need to use mini IVF, and you should forget about the so-called minor temporizing approaches like stimulating them with letrozole or just Clomid or IUI. All those approaches to PCOS are unsuccessful. You just got to go straight to mini IVF.
Now, when is IVF worth trying and when is it unlikely to work? Like,
Well,
how?
so the IVF really depends on a lot of factors. First place, the laboratory has to be a good laboratory. It's not like your uterus or your fallopian tubes. I mean, you have to recreate the proper environment. So the lab has to be good and very fastidious. But you also have to stimulate properly so you get good quality eggs. And that's where the mini IVF approach comes in and the trigger with Lupron comes in. And then you don't want to transfer those embryos right away fresh. You want to freeze them and then wait 3 months later. The uterine lining will recover from all those hormones and the ovary will recover and they'll be normal and it'll be safe to be pregnant then. So that IVF is really a critical part of it. But I mean, IVF sounds like you're going through so much, but it doesn't have to be that way. It can be much simpler and much easier than going through IUI, which is intrauterine insemination, or it can be much easier than what people are going through. And that's what you have to do to be successful with PCOS.
Now, many women think if I'm healthy, I'm fertile, but biology doesn't always cooperate. Can lifestyle improve equality?
Well, there's an interesting aspect of lifestyle. Many women think, well, they'll take a lot of supplements, dietary supplements. And I would like to really kill that idea right now. The vast majority of these supplements are certainly not approved by the FDA. They're not regulated, and they have really no favorable impact. And you're just wasting your money. And some of the supplements can actually have a negative effect. So don't do that. As far as lifestyle is concerned, becoming more overweight can make the PCOS worse. We know that. But what about diet? Well, There was a book with a crazy title written by a very serious scientist dietitian entitled How Not to Die. It's an outrageous title. How, and it's a thick book, but it is very scientific. These authors really did meticulous testing. And the conclusion is so simple. If you just eat a multicolored diet, you'll get all the nutritional ingredients you need. Forget about supplements, just a multicolored diet. I mean, brown for meat, maybe purple, orange, blue, yellow, white. I mean, all the different colors of the rainbow. And you don't have to be a vegetarian, of course. Brown for meat is fine. Tan for chicken is fine. White or red for fish is fine. But just multiple colors have been shown that way to have all the different ingredients, micro ingredients and macro ingredients you need for a healthy diet. So I recommend that all women and men too have a multicolored diet. That doesn't mean being a vegetarian, although so many of the different colored foods are vegetables, but you can have your meat and your chicken and your fish, and that's just fine. But multiple colors. So that I recommend that over the dietary supplements. In terms of lifestyle, I'm not saying this will give you a higher pregnancy rate, but everybody ought to exercise. Now I'm going to give you an interesting example, an interesting story. Hope I'm not talking too much. But in the animal world, animals that are in zoos normally live much longer than in the wild because they're taken care of properly. But that's not true of elephants. Elephants are peculiar. Their style of life is to walk and walk and walk 100 miles every day, eating as they're walking. And what do they eat? They eat wood and leaves. That's it. And yet they grow to 12,000 pounds. So what they would be doing if they were in just one area and not walking and eating is they would completely destroy that area. There would be nothing left of it, no trees, no bushes, nothing. It would be all destroyed. The ecology, their ecology would be ruined. So they evolved to just walk and cover hundreds of miles while they're eating because they tear down trees as they do. That's what they eat. And that way, the whole ecology of their wilderness area is okay. In the wild, elephants live 70 years. In zoos, they live about 40 years. And I've talked to the zoo people and zookeepers. They all say the same thing. As much as they want to give elephants exercise in zoos and do whatever they can, they can't. They don't have that kind of space. They can't walk 100 miles every day. And so in the wild, they get that exercise that they don't get when they're in the zoo. Just an interesting example. And so exercise is really way more important than people may realize. It's not just to try to look good or to win in an athletic event. Exercise causes the stem cells in your body to last a lot longer, to live longer, and you'll just live longer if you exercise more. Now, you might be unlucky and get a bad cancer. That's possible. But I'm just talking about aging. You will age more slowly if you exercise. So that's a very important part of lifestyle.
Now, what actually impacts egg viability?
The viability? Well, okay, this is something you won't read most places, but in the ovary, the eggs are all the eggs you're going to have. So the body has to have a way of keeping them viable for 40, 50 years. And the way they do that is they're located in the outer cortex of the outer membrane of your ovary, which is very tight, tough tissue. The toughest tissue in the body is the outer envelope of the ovary. And that tight, tough tissue causes the nuclei in those cells to rotate. And that keeps them alive for longer. And the same is true throughout your body, that myogenic tension causes the nuclei in your stem cells to rotate and allows them to last longer. So it's very, very important to have exercise. To become flabby and lazy is really bad for your lifespan.
Now, PCOS is one of the most common fertility conditions, yet many women feel confused. Why is that?
Well, PCOS is so common as an infertility problem. Because doctors and patients didn't know what to do about it. So typically, these women may very well get pregnant when they're teenagers or in their early 20s, because at that time of life, eggs are so spectacular, every egg is fertile. And if they ovulate once every 2 years, they'll wind up getting pregnant and have babies. But then, as they get into their late 20s and their 30s, women with PCOS just don't get pregnant. And nowadays, most couples are putting off trying to have children. Most women are putting it off until their 30s or 40s or 50s. And so by then, the PCOS condition they have will prevent them from getting pregnant completely. Because, as I've said before, it inhibits your pituitary glands, FSH and LH. You don't recruit a dominant follicle right away, and there's just a slow, gradual development. Now, I can explain this best by giving you some experimental data from our work in making competent eggs from skin cells that are turned into stem cells. So, when we do that with all different animals, we find that more than 7 days of exposure to these pituitary hormones are necessary for the eggs to mature. But more than 12 days of exposure to those pituitary hormones will result in poor quality eggs that degenerate. So there's a sweet spot of more than 7 and less than 12 days of exposure to gonadotropin that is really perfect for egg quality. So on any day, what is happening in your ovary is that these dormant primordial cells are recruited. They go through a 4 month period that is not hormonal. You don't even know what's happening, where they're just undergoing genetic preparation for being competent. And then after that 4 months, they suddenly become sensitive to the pituitary hormones, and that's going to lead to the ovulatory cycle, the menstrual cycle. Now, if they've been exposed to pituitary hormones for less than 7 days, well, those eggs aren't going to be any good. But if they've been exposed to pituitary hormones for more than 11 days, those eggs also won't be any good. So in a PCOS ovary, the majority of eggs in your ovary have been exposed to pituitary hormones for way more than 12 days, maybe 30 days, 40, 50 days. So the eggs just won't be any good. So what you have to do is first put them on birth control pills to kill off all those eggs that are just laying around that have had too long an exposure to pituitary hormones, and then do a fresh stimulation with a mild, modest number of pituitary hormones, and make sure that's only 7 to 12 days of exposure. You retrieve those eggs and then they're fertile. And that's what you have to do for PCOS, because the majority of eggs, and there'll be so many eggs sitting around in a PCOS woman's ovary, and they're just no good. They've had too much exposure to what we call gonadotropin.
Now, do you feel that PCOS is overdiagnosed?
No, that's an interesting question. I don't think it's overdiagnosed. I think it's underdiagnosed. Most doctors look for a woman who's very overweight, oily skin, acne. Those are the signs of excess testosterone that develops because of the metabolic syndrome. However, the vast majority of PCOS patients look completely normal and they're not overweight. But when you talk to them, you find out their periods are not regular. And they're just not able to get pregnant, no matter how hard they've tried for many, many, many years. But their majority are not overweight. It's a myth that PCOS patients are overweight. So I think it's underdiagnosed, not overdiagnosed.
Now, is it really as complicated as it sounds?
I say that again, I'm sorry.
Is it really as complicated as it sounds?
Oh, you're saying, is it complicated? Well, okay. I've tried to explain how simple it is. Now, if you read the literature and the science, there will be 1,000 articles every year that are so mixed up and it's so chaotic. And you talk to doctors, they're so mixed up, but it's really, really simple. We've done most of the research on this. It's remarkably simple. You have too many eggs. Those too many eggs are inhibiting the pituitary gland. And that's setting up a vicious cycle of no ovulation or late ovulation. It could also set up a metabolic syndrome where your ovaries are making too much male hormone, and so you've got oily skin and acne and overweight from excess hunger. That could all happen. But really, the majority of PCOS patients are thin or normal weight, and they just have too many eggs.
Okay. Now, why do some women with PCOS respond well to treatment?
Well, normally, if you give them just even a little bit of pituitary hormone to stimulate ovulation, you get, so many follicles that it scares you really.
Really?
And that's the usual response. So we go with very, very low dose, and we'll never just treat them without IVF. And we think IVF is very simple. Just retrieve those eggs, fertilize them, freeze the embryos, and don't even try to get her pregnant at the time you stimulated her, because it will be really a disaster. And then 3 months later, you get them pregnant. So it sounds like a big deal to do IVF, but really to do mini IVF is relatively simple, and that's clearly the only treatment that makes sense for PCOS.
Now, what's the biggest misconception about PCOS and fertility?
Say that again. I'm not sure I answered that question. What's the what?
What's the biggest misconception about PCOS and fertility?
Oh, the biggest misconceptions, there are so many of them, but I guess the biggest misconception is that it's caused by being overweight. Being overweight aggravates it, but doesn't really cause it. The majority of PCOS patients just look normal, but they do have irregular cycles. Now, some have regular cycles, but the ovulation is nonetheless late, and so they've had more than that 7 days and 11 days of exposure to pituitary hormones, and so those eggs are no good. So I think the biggest misconception about it is that it's overweight women with acne and hairy skin. Now, that's the way it was 80 years ago. It was called the Stein-Leventhal syndrome. That was before we could measure hormones. That was before we had ultrasound. We didn't really understand it very well. So, but that represents maybe 5% of women with PCOS that have massive ovary cysts, very hirsute or hairy skin, oily skin, and acne. Those represent maybe 5% or less of PCOS cases. But that's all we knew as PCOS 70 years ago when we called it the Stein-Leventhal syndrome. We don't call it that anymore.
Now, most importantly, why do you say it's often easier to treat than people think?
I think PCOS is easier to treat. It's easy to treat because there's so many eggs. The worst case are women who have poor ovarian reserve, not very many eggs at all, and they're even approaching early premenopause. But with PCOS patients, they have an abundance of eggs. So all we have to do is kill off the bad eggs with birth control pills and then do mild stimulation, and we get plenty of eggs. So, I think it's easier to treat than any of the other causes of IVF.
Now, let's simplify this. In vitro maturation, it sounds complex, you know. Can you explain it in real language? Like, for example, like what is it?
So, in vitro maturation would mean that we take immature eggs that we, I don't know if the audience will understand all this. They haven't extruded a polar body. They're just eggs that are so immature they will not result in a baby. And somehow or other, in the laboratory, in vitro, make them into mature, fertile eggs. And it's been something that we've been trying to do for many, many, many decades. And now we can do it because we understand that from in vitro production of eggs. We can take skin from rats, skin biopsy cells, turn them into stem cells. Turn those stem cells into what we call primordial germ cells, which is the beginning of an egg, and then culture them further, and we can make normal quality eggs and get baby mice from them. So what we've done in the human is when we take ovary tissue out to freeze it for women with cancer, we can get so many immature eggs out of that ovary tissue. It's so easy. They're almost invisible follicles, but there are eggs in them. And we look at the culture media after we dissected off the outer surface of that ovary, and we find so many immature eggs. And what we find is that when we culture them with a hormone called HCG or with LH, 35% on average develop into perfectly fertile normal eggs, which we can use for IVF, and we never had to stimulate them with any drugs. It just happened in vitro. And that's because of this. At any day in a woman's life, there will be many eggs that have left that phase where they're not hormone sensitive, have become hormone sensitive, and then eventually die off. And at any stage in her life, if you take that ovary, regardless of where it is in the fall, in the ovulatory cycle, there are going to be many, many eggs, and 35% of them will have had more than 7 days of exposure naturally to pituitary hormones and less than 12 days. It just makes sense because they begin to die off after 12 days. So you can just figure that in any given day in a woman's ovary, 35% of those eggs that you get out of the follicles, I don't mean the ones that are stuck in the fibrous tissue, but that you get out of the follicles, 35% of those eggs will have had the right amount of exposure to pituitary hormones in vivo, so that they'll be easy to mature in vitro. So when we take the ovary tissue out and we just look at the spent media, when we're about to freeze ovary tissue, that spent media had 35% of the eggs are perfectly good eggs. We will mature them, IVM, and they make normal, they'll make normal babies. So that's pretty exciting. Now the next question is, can we with a needle just get those eggs out without removing the ovary? And that's very, very difficult to do, because in those small follicles of the with the early eggs, the eggs have not come out on a stalk. And the reason with IVF we can just stick a needle in and get those eggs is because the follicle is ready to ovulate and the egg is out on a stalk. And so when you put a needle in, it's not that you're aspirating fluid that has an egg in it. When the fluid all comes out, that follicle that is on a stalk gets sucked into the needle and gets basically torn off the stalk. It's literally torn off. And so that's how you get eggs, mature eggs, after you've stimulated a woman. However, can we possibly get immature eggs, a much larger number, without having her, without her going through any hormonal stimulation whatsoever? Well, the Vietnamese, believe it or not, have figured out how to do this. And they make a special needle that is like a curette. And you literally have to scrape that egg off the surface of the inside of the follicle and get that immature egg out. And then it's no different than what we're doing with ovary tissue. You get these eggs that have had prior in vivo exposure to pituitary hormones, and they're perfectly ready to mature. Just 1 or 2 days exposure to HCG in a dish, and they become totally functional eggs that are ready to become babies. So that's IVM. We've pretty much pioneered IVM, making it work. And the Vietnamese have pioneered the way of getting those immature eggs out of the ovary with a needle without having to do surgery.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, what, how is it promising for PCOS patients?
Well, so PCOS patients, we can either do the mini IVF like we do, standard, and get the eggs that way and great results, or without stimulating them at all, you could needle them, get these eggs, and mature them in vitro, and they never had to have any stimulation whatsoever. So it's not successful enough yet that we're adopting that for all our PCOS patients. It will be, but it isn't yet. So we're still doing the mini IVF, which is relatively easy to do. But the extreme approach for PCOS patients would just be no stimulation. They come in to see you today in your clinic, and tomorrow you take them to the IVF lab and you put this little needle in and curette the immature eggs out, and without any hormones whatsoever, mature them in vitro and make normal eggs, fertilize them with husband sperm, and then you've got embryos you can transfer.
Wow. Now, why is it powerful for young cancer survivors?
Young women with cancer used to have almost a 98% mortality rate. It was terrible, whether it was leukemia or Hodgkin's disease. I mean, even 40 years ago, you had Hodgkin's disease, it was a death sentence. Nowadays, virtually everybody survives Hodgkin's disease. And in fact, 95% of young kids survive leukemia even nowadays. It's pretty amazing, these oncology drugs and what the oncologists are doing. So young people are surviving just remarkably despite cancers that used to be uniformly fatal. But however, the treatment renders them sterile. It kills all the eggs. So what we've been doing since 1997, it's a long period of time, is take out one of the ovaries before the cancer treatment and we freeze it. Now, you don't freeze the whole ovary, you just freeze the outer part. That's what has these resting follicles, which are hundreds of thousands of eggs, and that's where most of the eggs are, just in this outer membrane, outer envelope of the ovary. So we were able to freeze that just as though it were a piece of skin. It freezes easily because of the anatomy. And we can thaw it, and we can transplant it back just as though it were a piece of skin, like a skin graft, because it's all located in just a very tiny, thick outer membrane. And so beginning 10 years after 1997, we began to start transferring that tissue back to women where their other ovary is near the fallopian tube. And bingo, they're just getting pregnant right and left. The pregnancy rate is 80%. All of them ovulate and menstruate. And the spontaneous pregnancy rate without any IVF is 80%. Now, that is not true all over the world, but most of the surgical programs that are experimenting with this are not doing a good job surgically. They're just taking these pieces of tissue and sticking them into the peritoneal tissue of the abdomen. And they take, but they're nowhere near the fallopian tube. And so you don't get pregnancies. But we put it right where it should be microsurgically. And then the fallopian tube picks it up whenever she ovulates. And she may not ovulate every month. She might ovulate every 2 months. It might be very irregular because it's not really a normal ovary. It's just that piece of ovary tissue. But they do ovulate maybe every other month with a good quality egg. And as long as that fallopian tube is there and can pick it up, they get pregnant naturally on their own. IVF isn't so great for those patients because there aren't going to be that many eggs you'll retrieve. But natural pregnancy, relying on them to ovulate every month, works fantastically. 80% have at least one baby or more.
Now, who is not a candidate?
Where's the what?
Who is not a candidate
Oh,
for
who's
that?
not a candidate? All right. It used to be thought leukemia patients are not candidates. Not true. But with leukemia patients, we want them to go through their first cycle of chemotherapy. That kills all the cancer cells that might be in their ovary tissue. And then we take it out and freeze it. Whereas with other patients, we just take it out before any chemotherapy because there won't be any cancer cells in the ovary tissue. So most young people with cancer, young women with cancer, are good candidates for this. It'd be very rare to see someone that wouldn't be a good candidate for ovary tissue freezing who had cancer.
Now, is this widely available or is it still specialized?
It is unfortunately not widely available. It should be widely available because it's not difficult. We are the only ones in the United States actually doing this. And in Europe, it's done in Denmark and Belgium, in Israel, to a lesser extent, in Germany. But it's few and far between. And the most important reason for that is that it is relied upon by IVF doctors. Now, IVF doctors nowadays, not 20 years ago, but nowadays, everything they do is in their IVF lab. And all they really have the ability to do is put a needle in the ovary, suck the egg out, and then do their IVF work, and then transfer the embryo back. And that's good, and I approve of that. However, very few of them have any either surgical ability or have an operating room available to them. They do it in an office type setting. And but we always have had an operating room available. We've always been microsurgically oriented. So that's one reason why we're able to do this so successfully, because you have to take the ovary out and you have to freeze it, and then you have to transplant it back after thawing it. And that requires a type of surgical expertise that I don't think is difficult, but the people in this field of specialty of infertility, by and large, don't have that facility available. So that's why it's not readily available. It should be. I'm trying to teach people, and they have to set it up so that they have an operating room available, even though they're IVF doctors. And I'm
Right.
teaching whoever I can teach that's motivated, because it's just fantastic for cancer patients. So what's
Yeah.
happening usually is they're trying to freeze the eggs of cancer patients, and that's not a good thing, because you delay their cancer treatment. You only get one cycle, and those eggs may not be that good. Many women need two or three cycles of IVF to have some assurance of a baby. And so the success rate just isn't high, but that's about all they can do. And very often the oncologists are very hesitant to refer the patient to a reproductive doctor, because they know they're going to want to do IVF, and that'll delay their cancer treatment, and they don't want to delay the cancer treatment, because all the cancer patient cares about, they do not care about fertility. They want to save the life of their patient, and they're very focused on that. And then if you were to tell them, well, we'd like you to wait a month or two because we want to retrieve eggs from your patient, it just doesn't fit with their philosophy, because they want to treat the patient and cure the patient. So, but with ovary freezing, we just take the ovary out the next day, and the day after that, they can start their cancer treatment.
Now, this isn't just medicine, it's identity. It's hope, pressure, fear. What do women emotionally struggle with during IVF? Is it the weight in, the uncertainty, the financial stress, or the comparison to others, maybe?
The financial stress is enormous. Petri dishes that used to cost 15 cents now cost $15. And so IVF is very expensive. Now, when insurance companies say they pay for it, and usually they don't, but in some places they do, it's almost a joke. They pay so little that the IVF clinic has to really do a terrible job. And they really not do a good job, because insurance company is paying them hardly anything to equal the cost it would require to have a really good IVF program. So financial stress is, I think, the biggest problem for infertile couples. I wish there were a better way to solve that, but insurance reform would be necessary, because you can mandate insurance pay for it, but then they pay a little bit. They're not really professionally moral about it. I'll be very critical of the insurance companies. They are not professionally moral.
How can someone protect their mental health during this process?
How can they protect their mental health? Well, here's what I say. You can't kid yourself and fool yourself. Some people try to do that, or some psychologists try to do that by saying, well, we can live a child-free life and have a good life. We can manage to deal with being child-free. That doesn't work. But I think the best thing is what some people would just call meditation. So I tell patients that they can sit down as though they're a Buddhist monk 4 times a day and just focus on relaxing all their body muscles. Yoga experts call this a body scan, and they can just go from their head all the way down their toes and relax their body muscles. Now, when that happens by behavioral feedback, it relaxes your brain. And it sounds behavioral and it sounds mechanistic, but it works. And I think it works better than cognitive therapy for this situation, because it is a serious, I don't know how you can talk people out of being worried about not having children.
Now, if someone is like 38, 40, 42, when should they seek evaluation?
Well, I think at 38 to 42, an evaluation is hardly necessary. They just need treatment, because the age of the eggs is the big issue. Now, they may have other problems like tubal disease. All the other problems can be fixed. You can fix the tubes. They may have bad fibroids. You can fix the fibroids. They may have adenomyosis, endometriosis. You can take care of all that can be taken care of. What's time urgent is getting the eggs before they get older.
Now, what tests matter the most?
Well, the most important thing, and I'm repeating myself, I know that, is the age of the wife. Just a simple fact. Now, after that, AMH will tell you if she has a large number of eggs or a small number of eggs. It won't tell you the quality of the eggs, won't tell you the fertility of the eggs. That's only age. But AMH, so her age is the most important thing. Second most important thing is the AMH. Now, as
Right.
far as the sperm is concerned, at least 20% of the time, the sperm count is a problem.
Yeah.
We can always solve that easily with ICSI. We can inject sperm into the egg. So if she's going to need IVF anyway, it's not a big deal because you'll just inject the sperm into the egg. And
Right.
so now there are cases, maybe 1% of cases of fertility, where the man has no sperm. And even then, 60% of the time, we can find an occasional sperm in their testicle. But if we can't find anything in their testicle, then their only option is donor sperm. And I try to tell people that need donor sperm or donor eggs that the important thing is just to have the baby. And I will tell you what. You can always match for appearance and background. What you can't match for in a donor sperm or donor egg are five things: personality, character, intelligence, emotional stability, and bonding with you as the father or as the mother. But those five things are intangible. They're definitely not in the DNA, absolutely not in the DNA. And they arise in the first 2 years of life from how you interact with the baby.
Right.
So I tell people, don't be, if you need donor sperm, you need donor eggs, you shouldn't be afraid. It'll still be your baby.
Now, what delays cause regret later?
Well, yeah, I mean, if she's 23, I wouldn't mind her delaying and thinking this through. But if she's 40, she hasn't got any time to think anything through.
For
If she's
anything.
serious, she has to jump right into it. So it depends on her age. Normally,
Okay.
most of us say that 35 is that year when things begin to go sour between 35 and 40. So if she's under 35, she can take her time thinking about it. But as soon as she hits 35, she doesn't have time to think about it anymore.
Right. Now, when is it okay to breathe instead of panic?
Well, you should always relax, obviously, because panicking doesn't solve anything. But if you mean by that is when it is okay just to say, well, I don't need treatment, I'm just going to try to get pregnant naturally. Well, I think that's okay if you're under 35, and it might just work fine. But by age 35, then it's never okay to do that. You really
Right.
have to go for treatment right away.
Now, can you tell us a little about the services that you provide?
We provide everything related to fertility and reproduction, male and female. If a patient has cancer, we can remove the ovary and freeze the ovary tissue. If the male has cancer, we can freeze his sperm sample. That's much easier. If she has bad tubes, we can do microsurgery to fix the tubes. If he's had a vasectomy, we can reverse the vasectomy. We were the first to microsurgically reverse vasectomies. If it's just the usual type of fertility problem, again, we do IVF and mini IVF, and the most we do the most difficult cases. We are not just a local commodity. People come from all over the world that have had intractable cases, and we're really happy to take the most difficult cases, women with one quarter of an ovary left or blocked tubes or adenomyosis that's eating up the uterus, older women. We're willing to take on every difficult case.
Right. Now, where can people find you?
Okay, so we are in St. Louis, but you can go to our website, which is www.infertile.com. Terrific URL name. Just go to infertile.com. We're in St. Louis, and we have a phone number you can call, 314-576-1400. And mind you, we do free consultations by Zoom on everyone. So when you call up, it doesn't cost anything because you can tell that I love this. And everybody who calls, just call up, we'll have a free consultation.
I love that. I love that. And if there's one thing you want people to walk away with from this episode, what's one important factor that you'd like people to remember?
That is a great question. I will be extreme in my answer. Everyone can have a baby. You may not have any sperm, in which case we could use donor sperm, and I know you'll be happy. You may not have any eggs left, and we can use donor eggs, and you'll be happy. You may not have a uterus, and we can use a gestational surrogate, and you'll be happy. So if you are open-minded, all of you can have a baby, everyone.
I love that. I love that. And for the listeners who are listening, fertility is not a guarantee, but it's also not black and white. Understanding what's realistic and what's hype gives women control back. If you're navigating IVF, PCOS, or fertility after 40, you deserve clarity, not fear. We're going to include Dr. Sherman Seiber's information in our show notes, and this episode helped you. If it helped you think more clearly about your options, follow the episode, because here we don't sell hope, we explain it. And Dr. Sherman, thank you so much for being on the show today. You're just so knowledgeable in this area, and you do what so many women really hope to find: a good doctor like yourself who's compassionate, who's dedicated, who's well educated. And you explained everything so thoroughly and so well today. There are so many women out there who really want to have a baby, and for all the right reasons. And you're there, and you're their hope. And I thank you so much for dedicating your life to helping others, create families of their own and bring in newborns into the world, and just making people happy families, and bringing especially happiness to their lives. So thank you so much for everything that you do and for who you are, because you're truly a beautiful person.
Thank you so much. You make me blush. I appreciate that.
Oh, you're so welcome. I hope you have a wonderful day.
You too. You certainly, and everyone.